Right, Seth Welch, hey, thank you so much for coming on to the show today. I really appreciate your time. You're a busy man, so it means a lot.
I appreciate you for having me. This is an awesome thing you got going on here, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Heck yeah, man. So, hey, how old are you, first of all? You know, as we both get older, I've always looked at you as the young coach, you know, because you were my wrestling coach growing up.
Yep.
But now you're doing political things, and you're a member of the, not McLean County, Livingston County Board, so... How old are you? How long have you been doing this?
I am 31 years old. I will be 32 as of November 3rd, so I am accepting gifts sent to the house, if you remember by then. But yeah, and I've always had an interest in politics, but was fortunate enough to a year and a half ago, got elected to the Livingston County Board, and here I am giving another shot at it.
Mm-hmm. So when are the elections for Livingston County Board? Go ahead.
No, so it's a little bit different this year. Typically in the years past, if we didn't have to go through COVID, we'd already had this vote by now. But because we're with the COVID pandemic and the governor's legislation that he passed through, basically moved the primary to June 28th. So when everybody is out and about on vacation and things like that, we've got a primary election in the middle of summer, so to speak. So yeah, it's a little bit different this year. Early voting, I believe, starts on May 19th. So you can go into the Livingston County County Clerk's office and sign up to get registered to vote. You can register to vote and vote in the same place. So
okay, so where else can you vote, or is it just the Livingston County Clerk's office? Is that the only place?
I believe so. As far as the register or voting in person, I believe it has to be done at the Livingston County Clerk's office, and that's just at the old courthouse in Pontiac, that big fancy building that we have sitting in the middle of town there.
Okay. So, why should anyone care about the Livingston County Board? Let's just start there.
That's a great question. There is, and I've been talking to some folks, and you know, local politics, it's not sexy. It's not the pound the chest, partisan, this or that. It's about making sure that, you know, our local services are operating, to make sure that we have people to fill the requirements that the taxpayers ask of us. Local government, I always argue, is the most personal level of government, because out of the 11,000 constituents that I have, I'd argue a majority of them know how to get a hold of me, give me a phone call and say, hey, Seth, this is where I stand on this. This is what I want you to consider. As opposed to, you know, the state and federal, where you might not necessarily ever meet your state senator, you might not ever meet your congressional representative. So, I advocate that local government, it's where the real things happen. It's, you know, we talked about it last time we were the podcast. We all want good roads to drive on. We all want safe bridges to cross. We all want, you know, fair shake of taxes, and local government is the first step in making sure that we have those things.
Are you guys directly responsible, you on the Livingston County Board, for filling the potholes in Livingston County?
Yeah, for certain roads. So it all depends on really the jurisdiction of the road. So County Highway 24, that's something that's under, you know, the state's jurisdiction. But, you know, we do all the county roads. Anything that's in the city, obviously, is responsible to that municipality. But any of the county roads that you have, and I'm trying to think of what, like the Weston Blacktop would be a good example. That's a county road. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of things that we take care of.
Okay. So right now, you know, I'm not up to date with everything, but I know a lot of people are up in arms about the Pontiac prison. Something about the Pontiac prison. I just had a guard on just the other day. The episode's going out this Sunday. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be awesome. But he was a guard at the Pontiac prison riots in 1978. But what's going on with the Pontiac prison now? I know a few years back there was concern about closing Pontiac prison maybe, but what's the big deal now?
From what I understand, I encourage folks next Tuesday, May 10th, there'll be a town hall or a forum where our state senators and state representatives, as well as some representation from the Livingston County Board and the city of Pontiac, are going to be there to answer the very questions that we have. So I'm not necessarily privy to the information of what the state is expecting to do or what they're trying to do, but it does appear that they are taking prisoners and transferring them out. So there definitely is a reduction in the prison population, and that's something that raises the concern. My issue with it, or one of the problems that I had, was that it was kind of something where they were taking prisoners out of there at night, you know, kind of sweeping sweeping them away. And that's, you know, and again, if we were to do that on a local level, people could give us a call and say, hey, we want answers for this. Or, you know, they show up at our door knocking on it. When it's a state or federal, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the concern then in sweeping people away in the night, or these prisoners? What could that mean? Are they trying to hide the fact that maybe the state government, I don't know if J.B. Pritzker's, it's directly under him, but are they trying to maybe, or is at least the concern that they're maybe going to close the prison?
I think that they, in the reports that I've read, and this is just, you know, I'm privy to the same information as anybody in the public. I think that they have made it clear that there are certain financial situations, certain logistical situations that they argue Pontiac is not prepared or not, you know, is not able to handle those. So, you know, this is a part of the process. Like you said, it happened back in, you know, the early 2000s. They tried to close it down. This is a part of the political process. They may have tried to do it a little bit sneakily, but because we have representation, our state senators, our state representatives, they were at the governor's office saying, we need answers. You know, you need to give us your outline. And so hopefully on May 10th, we'll be able to have a better idea of what's actually going to happen with that.
Okay, May 10th. What's significant about May 10th?
It's just going to be the town hall forum.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Pontiac Township High School. Yeah, at 6:30 to 8 p.m. We're going to have our local representatives, our state representatives there. And that's where we can ask the very questions that me and you are asking right now.
Okay, what would the goal be with closing that prison? Like, what might the state officials be saying is the reason behind closing this? Like, we should close Pontiac Prison because blank. What are they going to say?
Well, I think, you know, some of the things that I've heard is that it's such an aging prison, but they, you know, the argument against that is they've made tremendous, you know, investments in that prison over the years. So to just say that the building's old and can't be used is a little bit of a moot point because they've invested so much money into that. I think, you know, and obviously their other reason is going to be just financials. You know, I don't think it's any mystery of anybody, you know, in the state of Illinois that, you know, our financial matters are in a bit of disarray. Mm-hmm. So they're going to use any kind of opportunity they can to attempt to save pennies. Now, whether that's the reason, the actual reason behind it, because I've heard all sorts of things, but I just think they're probably looking at it from a fact of saving some cash.
In what ways is the state of Illinois mismanaging their finances?
Well, I don't think it's nothing direct. I just think that, you know, obviously, you know, our one of the biggest issues that I have with the state of Illinois is that we are not pro-business. That, you know, you have to have a healthy batch of both private citizens like me and you paying taxes, but that also has to be supplemented by businesses, the business community, and all the other types of taxing things that you can have. So I don't want to accuse the state of Illinois, anybody in there, of, like, you know, taking money and buying private jets or anything like that. I just think that I believe in conservative, you know, financial responsibility. And I would argue that the state of Illinois hasn't done that now. They didn't do it under Bruce Rauner, and they didn't do it under any of the governors before. So
Now let's talk about what that even means to be financially conservative. Mm-hmm. When I hear the word conserve, I hear the root word of the word is conserve, you know, hold on to, maybe don't be. And then you think of the word liberal, and it, you see on the back of lotion bottles, apply liberally. More than enough is what that means. You know, just go for it type of thing. Yeah. Just more than enough. I would think that you wouldn't want to financially be liberal in that sense, in the literal sense of the word. But what does it mean really to be financially conservative? Because you do want to fund new progressive things that are going to lead to the flourishing of a society. Yeah. But what's it mean to you?
Conservative government to me just means being practical, being pragmatic in the decisions that you make, and understanding that every promise that you make is in some way, shape, or form going to, while it might benefit some people, it's going to impact others. And that's a natural way of life. So I think that if you enter things with, instead of trying to get a pat on the back and saying, hey, you got this in our district, as opposed to, okay, you had some restraint, and that's going to put us in a better position in 20 to 25 years. That was the one thing that I hit on the last time that, you know, you and I, you know, got to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. Was I truly believe that you have to be willing to make the tough decisions. And sometimes those tough decisions aren't popular. But that's what fiscal conservatism is to me. It's making those tough decisions, even when it's going to piss off 95% of the people. And you're exactly right. you know, I am a small government person, but I do believe that government is important. I believe that it serves an important role, particularly on the local level. And as we go into, you know, all the mess that we have in the economy right now, that fiscal conservatism, I think, is going to, I strongly believe, is going to be the shining light moving forward, because eventually there isn't going to be any money left to, that's a stretch, but there isn't going to be that free cash flow that we've had for the past, you know, 10 years. I don't think it's going to be there.
What are your thoughts? You know, we're talking about finances here. And by the way, we're drinking beer, delicious beer from Emancipation Brewing Company in Fairbury, Illinois. These guys are amazing. This beer is really, really good.
It's
Huey, and a portion of the sales of Huey go towards music and sports boosters at Prairie Central. Just got to say thanks, because the stuff's awesome, and Lincoln Slagle and Emancipation are amazing. And you're talking about, you know, the value of businesses, especially small businesses. Just had to say that.
Yep,
but
a good group of people out there.
Oh, absolutely. And what do you think, though, about, I mean, we did print trillions of dollars. I recently spoke to the head of the McLean County Democrats, Patrick Cortese, and he, you know, we together just made sure that Biden did, in fact, order the printing of trillions of dollars, at least over $1 trillion, in the sending out of stimulus checks and everything like that. Now, that's not very financially conservative, if I understand correctly. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, in my opinion, and you know, the whole COVID thing, it has put us on a different trajectory that, you know, I think that, in my opinion, in 20 years, we're going to look back and say that might have been a bad decision. Whether it goes from the supply chain issues that we're having right now, we literally shut the world down, the entire world, for 2 years, and then expected it just to, you know, turn off the faucet and then turn it back on. That is not, you know, I work in supply chain, and the, you know, the impacts and the issues that we see across that are everywhere. And that is just going to continue to trickle down. It's going to impact businesses and impact individual people like me and you. Any time for any of us to sit back and like scratch, and I'm not an economics person by any means, but for any of us to sit back and, you know, like you mentioned, you know, Biden put trillions of dollars in, Trump put trillions of dollars in. It's just been continuing to go time and time again. When you pump trillions of dollars into the economy in less than a year and a half, you are going to have inflation. And it just exacerbates the problem because of the supply chain issues that we, you know, because of the extra stuff that comes along with that.
What do you mean pump trillions of dollars into the economy? What does that mean exactly? Are you saying print?
Well,
trillions
in regards to that, but, you know, more specifically with the, you know, American Relief Plan Act, you know, the ARPA, you know, sending out all the COVID money, so to speak. You know, I mean, there was, excuse me, you look at the, across the board, there were, and I don't have specifics with me, but, you know, there were lots of businesses, organizations, very, very wealthy people that got a lot of money. And for what? You know, what's the purpose behind that?
Isn't that what people got in trouble for? Because a lot of people were buying like luxury sports cars and things
and
like
that. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's going to take us 10, 20, 30 years for us to be able to peel back the onion and see how much financial or how much spending mismanagement there was. And I think it's only going to continue. Anytime you pump, you know, and how we're supposed to correctly address COVID, I don't have the answer for that. But I will argue now, stepping back, playing Sunday or Monday morning quarterback, that, you know, the way that we handled it was wrong. And it's going to have implications that impact people for years down the road. But yeah, pumping into the economy through the different government grants that were there, and no doubt it helped businesses, it helped people, it gave us that leg up. But to continue to pump that cash into the economy, it's just, in my opinion, the inflation is only going to continue. And for anybody to step back and scratch their head and say, well, how the hell did this happen? It's like, well, you printed, you pumped, whatever term you want to call it, that $3.5-4 trillion that wasn't there, however, you know, 3 years back, was all of a sudden there. So what is the implications of something like that? So,
right. Well, you know, and I'm not an economist like you were saying, but in the simplest terms, I've looked up a lot of YouTube videos on this because I like to hear both sides. Yep. I like to hear the left and the right. When it comes to finances, though, I definitely lean right. I lean conservative for sure. But to me, it seems relatively simple that if you print $1 trillion now, instead of, I don't know how many trillions of dollars, I'm going to throw out a random number, $20 trillion in circulation in the United States, you know, in everyone's pockets, you combine it all, there's $20 trillion. Yep. If you add an entire trillion to that, now effectively there's more money to buy the exact same amount of stuff. And therefore, what are you going to do? What are the people selling this stuff going to do? Honestly, they almost don't have a choice, but the prices are going to rise. If people are producing milk and milk's on the shelves and all of a sudden, you know, instead of 80 people a day buying it at Dave's supermarket, maybe 150 can buy it at Dave's supermarket. So what are they going to do? Supply and demand. Mm-hmm. The demand is high and the supply is finite. So they want more money. They're going to have to raise the prices. And that's the case with everything. And then once the money is spent, you know, a lot of families won't have any more for the next few years. You know, it comes and then it goes and then it's in wherever it goes after that permanently. But then you see things like rising crime in the inner cities because these people got their checks and maybe they're not financially as literate or intelligent as some other people. And maybe that's harsh to say, but they don't have that money, but the stuff's still a higher price. So what are they going to do? You got to maybe steal, you got to rob someone, you got to sell some drugs.
Or they'll come out with
drugs.
A government program that subsidizes those people from the exact same mess that the government caused in the first place. So I'll go back to that conservative question that you asked. I believe that every able-bodied American should work. And where you work, that's up to you. But there are plenty of jobs out there, and unemployment, while it does continue to tick down, it's not at a satisfactory level. And I would argue that that is because of all of the different programs that we have that give people the opportunity or give them that chance to basically step out of the workforce. And I believe that's why we're seeing the problems that we're seeing today, or one of the reasons why we're seeing those problems. It's the government continuing to pump money in. Then when things get freaking chaotic, they come back and then they put another program in that takes care of the problem before. And it's just a continuous thing, as opposed to just letting the economy work itself out, as opposed to not giving people money so they don't have to show up, you know, to work every day. You know, those are the kinds of problems that are going to stem from, in my opinion, the government getting involved in things that should be going normally anyway.
Mm-hmm. So we've been, as a country, been in debt for a long time. I guess that means to other countries internationally, we've had to pay for things with money we don't have. So I don't know what that means, but it seems like they're not the same consequences for the country of the United States when they get in debt to China as the consequences that I get if I'm in debt to the bank. You know, they're coming and taking my truck. And with the United States, it's not like China can come and take anything, yeah. Although by the same logic, they would. So what does it matter that we're in this debt? Why could that be a bad thing for the country? And I know we're zooming out here to the federal level and you're a local politician, but it still matters. What does it matter that we're in debt to other countries?
Just, all it's doing is, and I don't know, I can't give you the specific scientific answer, but it's just putting us in obligations. I mean, the debt that we are piling on now are obligations that people who aren't even alive on this planet yet are going to have to face. And it just continues to keep weighing down that pocket. So when you want to try and jump up to another rung, you're going to have even that much more. And it just depreciates the value of what we have here. And that's just the way it is. To be in debt to anybody, I mean, I'm a black and white person, and to be in debt to anyone should not be a way to go about doing business. Now, obviously, you have to have a certain level of debt in order to be able to, you know, compensate for everything else that you're doing. But, you know, my biggest issue with how much money that we're pumping into the economy is because, you know, we're putting burden on your kids who aren't even here yet. You know what I mean? And that's not if I have the debt, or we have the debt that came with our generation, and I'm pissed. I'm upset for that because, you know, in my opinion, we had conservative leadership, and, you know, mixed in with the progressive leadership, but that conservative leadership was in there just as much, you know, equal amount of time, and we're still in the same mess that we are. And we have really gotten away from, you know, I can remember, you know, back in 2008, you know, the talk of $1 trillion when they were talking about trying to bail out the banks, you know, they purposefully didn't make it $1 trillion because they knew the American people would lose their shit. I mean, and rightfully so. But now today it's like, well, you know, we're going to spend $33 billion in Ukraine and $60 billion for this program and $80 billion for that program. And it all trickles down to, you know, $3 trillion. And that's a problem.
How often does the federal government make decisions about where the money goes? There's a name for that, right? I mean, they come up with the federal budget every year. Yeah. Like, Does that mean
like appropriations maybe or something along those lines? Or
I don't know exactly. I wish I knew my terms better. But is there a day of the year that the federal government figures out how much money it has to spend on various things? Or is there a day of the year that all these different committees and fields, I guess, figure out how much money they're going to get that year, you know, for international this or that and these different things? I'm hardly making sense. Maybe you know what I'm saying.
No, like, yeah, but I can't speak for what the federal government does, but I can tell you how we handle that same process in terms of how we budget on the county level. So it's not just a one day, you know, thing. This is something that happens over, you know, 5 to 6 month period. So planning for a budget isn't something that, you know, just we stop in on a Monday and say, hey, we're going to do this here, this here, this here. I mean, it's a step-by-step process that happens over, you know, a wide swath of time. And yeah, we get feedback from, you know, the administrators that we have at the county. We get feedback from county board members. We get feedback from our constituents. And we use that to be able to appropriate money throughout the county. And then once we set that budget, whatever is appropriated, you know, obviously they can't go above that particular number. So I would assume that it happens, you know, for the most part, the same on a federal level.
Do you think that... I guess it's not. Do you think can counties go into debt just like states can go into debt? And like I know Illinois is, and like the United States is. Can counties go into debt just the same?
Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure there's some cases, particularly you know with places in the Midwest and states in the South that probably, or counties in the South that probably go through that. But luckily, Livingston County is in a strong financial position, and that's for a wide swath of. Swath of reasons, I'd be happy to go into them.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, please tell me. First of all, are we in a little debt or are we in, you know, a moderate amount or in no debt and why?
Well, it kind of depends on what your definition of debt is. I mean, you always have, you know, financial obligations that put you, you know, at risk for anything in the future. But, you know, like I said, we are in a strong financial position. And Livingston County is unique compared to other counties, you know, particularly those that are the same size as us, because, you know, obviously any county's number one source of revenue is going to be property taxes, you know, the taxes that we levy on the individuals. But Livingston County has two alternate sources of funding that really, you know, pump a lot of revenue into our coffers, in which we're able to take that pressure off of the constituents or the taxpayers in Livingston County. And the first one is the Livingston County landfill. Obviously, that thing is a huge moneymaker for Livingston County. The revenues have trended down over the past decade or so, and that's in large part because of the statewide regulations that have been coming in and the surcharges that are put on that. So it's cheaper for people or for, you know, places in Chicago to take their trash over to Indiana as opposed to driving it 60 miles, you know, to the south to Livingston County. It's still a huge moneymaker for us. And then we have the Livingston County Jail, which we house federal inmates and transport inmates. Obviously, with the Pontiac Correctional Facility there, it kind of ties us in. They're two separate entities, but they tie us in, and it allows us to make some cash from the federal government. So that's that has really propped up our bank statements, if you will, and just gives us a lot more freedom in the services that we provide, and then we can take that burden off the taxpayers. Is the goal of that.
Is there a Livingston County bank account that you can just look at the numbers, say, what's our balance right now?
Or I mean, we have accounts at banks, but your biggest thing would be to look at the budget that we have. And our budget is always, you know, available online. Obviously, it's a requirement, but we have, I mean, we're transparent. We're not doing anything secretive over there. You know, everything that we do is open to a FOIA request. So, you know, even my text messages during a meeting, if you want to see what I'm saying, you can FOIA my phone. And you can basically read my text messages in there. So if you can read my text messages, I promise they'll let you read the budget that we have.
So. Yeah. So that FOIA, what does FOIA stand for?
Freedom of Information Act.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I had a guy, one of my most popular episodes, I talked to a father from from Pontiac High School.
Boo. No, yeah. They're not my district, so I don't have to worry about them.
Oh, well, I talked to him and like he had like a, not a scuffle, but an altercation with the principal. And it was this whole thing. And anyway, the Pontiac High School told me that, hey, you know, you just make a FOIA request, or someone told me that I could tell this to Pontiac High School, you know, make a FOIA request and you'll get access to that security camera footage. And it was that easy. Yeah. Like, I mean, within the same day, they said, here you go. And I just said, you know, according to the FOIA FOIA Act, whatever it is, I can get this footage. And they said, yeah, here. And I was like, whoa, apparently that's a thing. I didn't quite understand, but it even applies to you, your text messages.
Surely text messages
related to the board.
Yeah. So if we're ever in a meeting and I don't take my phone, I'm just not a tech person, but you know, even my phone, I don't like to have it with me, but if you are in a meeting and you are basically texting on your phone, that is considered a part of the meeting and the public has a right to know. And I firmly agree with that. You know, if you have something to say and you want to put it on a text messages and it's about the meeting that you're in, then you should just say it out loud. And if you don't want to say it in public, then don't put it in a text message.
So even if your girlfriend messages you and says, I don't think this is going to work, and
I haven't tried that yet, but I think there might be some stipulations. It's between board members, I guess. I probably should have. So if board member A texts me and says, hey, that's bullshit what they just voted on, or and this is why, I can basically, you know, anybody can FOIA that. But it might even go to the fact that, anybody that texts me might be open to them. But I do know it's between any board members, so I just keep it a practice to keep that bad boy in the car.
Livingston County versus McLean County, who's better? I know McLean County, we're right here in Normal. There's a lot of people mad about how we use money here in Normal. A lot of infrastructure, you know, the library, this underpass, a lot of people are mad. I had a lady stop me at TJ Maxx today just to tell me that she was mad about that, actually. So who's doing better? I know we've got Rivian and Normal, but Livingston County's got a lot of things as well. So
yeah, well, I think we're on two separate, you know, obviously two separate playing fields, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, what McLean County is pushing for, what their strategic plan is different than what we have in Livingston County in our strategic plan. So, you know, to sit and say, you know, who's better, Canada or the United States, I mean, that's not even a comparison.
So it's a dumb question, only a dummy would ask.
Well, so. I'm trying to say, you know, to compare it, but, you know, I think, you know, obviously, McLean County has a lot larger revenue stream than what we have in Livingston County. And that's just, you know, the reality. Obviously, you've got this, you know, how many universities and colleges do you have here? You mentioned, you know, you touched on Rivian. There's other factories here. It just is. But, you know, at Technical Metals, I have 10 people that drive from Bloomington to, you know, come to work in Livingston County. And, you know, we've got other folks who, you know, travel to it. I think it's just what people, you know, what their personal preferences is. I love Bloomington. I love Normal. I come down here all the time to take part in the, you know, different stuff that they have going on. But I couldn't live here. I couldn't live in a larger community. And I think that's why we have a lot of, you know, folks who still live in Livingston County, but may commute down here to go to work. It's just that kind of smaller, kind of that smaller hometown feel, but we still have a lot of the same amenities. You know, we've got just speaking about Dave's, I mean, we got most small communities like ours don't have grocery stores, they don't have pharmacies, but most of our small communities in our town, in Livingston County, do. So I would argue the difference between Livingston County and McLean County is our ability to be self-sustainable, that, you know, we are going off on a different niche. I think the agritourism is something that's really going to be, you know, picking up big time, and I think Livingston County can benefit off that. But in terms of difference, you know, I think one of the great things that I've definitely been trying to sales pitch is that, you know, Livingston County is located smack dab between two of the largest interstate systems in the United States, I-55 and I-57, that connect us to some of the largest markets in the world. I'm thinking Chicago, St. Louis, anywhere that those things take us to. We've got the Amtrak that runs through and goes from Pontiac, the high-speed rail. You know, I just went to Chicago the other day, and it took me, you know, 55 minutes to get from Pontiac to Chicago. I was able to go up there, do business, and jump on the train and come right back down and still live my small-town life, yet do the big-city business stuff that I had to do. So it's just, I think we have all the same amenities. I just think we're two different paths, and I think they're working out for both of us.
It's really interesting. You know, I brought friends down to Fairbury, and most towns of that population, but in different regions of the state, towns of that size are way more sleepy. You can tell they're kind of going down, but you go to Fairbury and there's a lot of new businesses in the last few years.
Yep.
It's clean, it's nice, it's friendly, the people are very nice.
And that's not just Fairbury, that's Forest and Chatsworth as well. You know, just talking about that little you know, section of the county, I mean, you go down those two, they are completely different from when I was, you know, going to those places in high school. You know, downtown Forest is starting to build up. Chatsworth has an excellent downtown that has a lot of different amenities that, you know, I went there garage sailing a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, they had a place for me to eat. They had some places for me and my friend to go shopping. I mean, they had everything that, you know, that you'd get anywhere else. So, but yeah, sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, you're fine. And, well, are counties like Livingston County in that way? You know, you're talking about Chatsworth, Forest, and Fairbury. Is that rare? Or are most counties like that? Or is Livingston County kind of a really good place to be a small town? You know, because they're not dying.
Yeah. Just to speak on my... I mean, Livingston County, I don't want to take away from the reality. I'm not trying to, you know, paint, you know, put sprinkles on a piece of shit and say this. I mean, our population is decreasing. We lost 8% of our population in the past decade, and it has been consistently, you know, for the past several decades, has been trending down. So that's obviously, you know, a concern for people. But our town is in no way, shape, or form, or our communities, wouldn't call them dying. But yeah, I mean, there is a massive trend of, you know, people moving to the larger communities. But I also read documents now that talk about the urban exodus. You know, people are, you know, especially with COVID and people's ability to stay at home and work, you know, they are starting to move to smaller communities. So it's just, I think our biggest thing moving forward is how do we make our communities so that if people wanted to have that as an option, if they wanted to live in Fairbury yet could work remotely, that we have the amenities and things that they need that would draw them here and make them think it's okay.
Right. And I sure love Fairbury, but it seems like, I mean, Lexington is bumping right now. That place got a new brewery. Yeah. It's got a new physical therapy place, Ultra Physical Therapy in downtown Lexington, Illinois. Great place. But they're on the rise. People are moving there from Normal and from Bloomington, from nearby places, people that work at Rivian, because they want that small town, relaxing, nice, friendly place that maybe Bloomington and Normal don't quite offer in the way that they want. Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, you see the exodus from small towns, but you also see the urban exodus. So are people moving? It seems like populations are somewhat collecting near the interstates. I've had Dan Gross on, and he lived in Shenoah when the interstate came to be, and he said
back in the 1880s, huh?
Yeah, I think he texted me. He said he was born shortly after the Model T and the moving picture. But anyway, so are the interstates? Is that where people are collecting? Where are the populations going if they're leaving small towns, at least most of the time, and if they're also sometimes leaving urban areas? Are they going towards the interstates, or is there something else that people are going towards?
I'm not sure the specifics of it, but, you know, I just as a person, you know, I don't have a family, but I can imagine that someone that has a family and maybe works in the big city and wanted to come to a, you know, smaller community, the reasons they would do that is because, you know, it's a safe area. They have great schools for their kids. They have a fair shake at taxes. You know, they have infrastructure that works for them. So, and I think that our communities have been able to maintain that. But there are different things like high-speed internet that, you know, and we do have some spots in the county that have, you know, bad cell phone reception. So those are the little pieces of infrastructure that I think we could put into place. And they are, you know, it's been an ongoing process. You know, this is stuff that's already happening, you know, just to kind of bring us to that connectivity. But I think it's probably the same. I mean, why would I move somewhere? Because it's a good place to be. And it's a good place to be because you got places to go out to eat. You know, like I said, good schools for your kids. You know, you don't have to worry about locking your door. You don't have to worry about shit getting stole out of your car. I mean, it's just things like that. So
I think that's why people, a big part, I mean, crime is a big deal. A lot of people are moving out of Bloomington Normal, and Bloomington Normal is a great place. I mean, crime is relatively low, relatively meaning if you compare it to places like Chicago and other big cities in Peoria, I believe it's relatively low, but it's even lower, practically non-existent in a place like Lexington, in a place like Fairbury, as far as home robberies and carjacking and things like that go.
I think not to cut you off, but I think that, you know, the influx of crime that we're seeing, I think, is in large part, you know, because of the changes that are happening to law enforcement and criminal justice, not just in the state of Illinois, but across the country. I mean, people that were supposed to be in jail for longer periods of time are being let out. People aren't going to jail for the same things that they did in the past. And that's just eventually, I mean, I think we're starting to see the fruit of, you know, that legislation that was passed, specifically in Illinois, and then, you know, what was going on at the federal level as well.
Yeah, there's some... There's definitely problems going on with the criminal justice system, especially from on a state-to-state basis. This whole, I mean, in California, I think at least in LA County, they, if that's a county, they say, you know, these petty crimes are no longer, mm-hmm. you can't imprison someone or something. They're just, how do I say this? They're not federal offenses anymore. So a lot of people, there's a huge spike in crime in LA, and people are just upset about it. Yep. I was just listening to a thing today about it. I mean, the jewelers are dimming their lights to look like they're not open, and only people that actually shop there will know that they're open because of something. Yeah. And among many other things, but it's terrible. And some states have defunded their police to a great extent in the past year and a half, and now they're funding them even more than they were before. Yes. they defunded them. So it's very strange, and I don't mean to sound like just a far-right guy, but it's like, well, you could have avoided all this mess if you looked further down the road and weren't so liberal in your changing of the law. You know what I mean?
I mean, we're people, society as a whole, I mean, we're just like kids, and that includes politicians, anything. You know, your parents tell you, quit playing with a damn fire. You know, quit, you know, poking the fire when you're sitting around making s'mores and things like that, and you just keep doing it. And eventually your parents say, you know what? He's got to burn himself in order to figure out that that's not the best way to do it. And unfortunately, you know, we have 300 plus million people in this country. And the good thing about it is every single one of us, our opinion matters. Our votes are equal. What we believe is of importance to every single one of us and to the, you know, the group as a whole. That's enshrined in the Constitution. And so, you know, in order for people to learn, you have to basically, you have to get burnt. You have to make mistakes. And yeah, you should fight. You know, as the, you know, Republican folks did in the state of Washington, for example, but it didn't follow through. And, you know, luckily we didn't go through that conversation here in Illinois, but had we have, you know, we probably would have been a state that would have been advocating hard for that defund the police. And unfortunately, because of the majority minority situation that we're in, it probably would have happened, but we'd be in the same boat that, you know, you sit back and the people in Seattle like, oh, wow, this wasn't a good idea. Or Philadelphia, no, this was not a good idea. And then you, like you said, you pump more money into it. So it's a constant, make a decision, it doesn't work, and then you find a way to correct that decision. So that's just, we're going to continue. And it's unfortunate that things are as, you know, split and as partisan as they are in society now, but we're going to continue until, you know, me and, you know, one of my most liberal and progressive and hard left friends can admit and sit down and have a conversation with each other and say, your idea is dumb because of this, you know, until we can basically agree on that, we're going to continue to, as the tide shift, we're going to go to one far side and then we're going to go to another. And that's just, that's the way that it is. It's a messy process. It's not enjoyable most of the time, and it definitely tears people apart. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to come back. Logic, reason, pragmatism, practicality always wins. And whether it's in a five-year or a 20-year or a 50-year, it always, in my opinion, it tends to come back and circle back.
Right. And conversation is the cornerstone of all relationships, be it political, yes. be it familial, be it with your significant other. You've got to communicate. And there's a way to communicate, right? You ask the question and then you shut up and you listen, right? And you try to actually understand, which is so, so rare. Yeah. You know, I've sat across from people who I seriously disagree with, but I sit here and I'm thinking, you know, maybe I am wrong. Yeah. So let's hear them out and hope I get a thrill out of being proven wrong. Yeah. And are convinced otherwise to what I, you know, currently believe. Yeah. But if we could just sit down and have a podcast between you and someone, your opposition in government, and just hash ideas out, but not just hash ideas out and we're yelling over each other like you do on Fox and CNN on a 5-person panel discussion that lasts 2 minutes. Yeah. Not like that, but, you know, one person says a thing and they get to talk for 5 minutes and then they shut up and there's not a crowd, you know, so they're not trying to play to the crowd. Yeah. That's the worst thing in debates, you know, in these televised debates. They stop talking to the person, they start talking to the crowd. But, you know, you could talk one-on-one in a respectful manner where you are trying to understand the other side and you don't cut them off. Yeah. I think, I mean, that's one of many reasons I believe podcasting is the future, you know, and maybe we can do something like that down the road. You and someone you disagree with, I don't know who the opposite of Seth Welch.
J.B. Pritzker, get in here, sir.
Yeah. Hey, man.
Calling you out.
I'm trying to get him. Instead, I might be getting a couple people running for governor that are Republicans, but I'd love to talk to J.B. And I would shut up and I would listen and I would hope that he could convince me.
Yeah.
To believe what he believes instead of what I believe now. And sometimes Democrats can convince me of certain things. And some things I'm more liberal than conservative on when it comes to the overall way that society runs.
Yeah.
But you just agree with what you're saying. I mean, communication is everything. And until you can sit across from someone and agree that a thing is dumb, I guess we've got work to do.
Yeah. And there is, and that's one of my big issues, and I'm stealing it from someone because I heard it on a podcast a while back, but there is no dialogue anymore. It is monologue. Everybody has a one message and they spit it. Nobody gets to, you know, no one's there to be like, hey, I have a question about that, or hey, I need, but once it's out there, you know, once it's on the television or on the internet, it's like, nope, that's the way that it is because that person said it. So you're exactly right. The dialogue where people can come in and have conversation with each other, question, it's not even, and to me, it's not even about convincing. I mean, I have conversations with people all the time where they don't convince me of their side, but you know, I pride myself in my empathy that I'm able to put myself in somebody else's shoes. You know, particularly with this abortion thing that came out, you know, Roe v. Wade, the conversation that they're having, the draft opinion. I don't personally believe in abortion. I think it's the same thing as capital punishment. I don't believe that people have a right to take the life of anyone else, no matter what. That's my personal belief. But, you know, so I was talking with, you know, different friends that I have, you know, in the past couple of days, and I don't agree with their opinions on abortion when they support it, but I can be empathetic, you know, because the first part of their conversation that they had was, have you ever been pregnant? Are you a woman? You know, are you concerned about your reproductive rights? I'm not, but it's because I'm a single, you know, I'm a single man. I can't get pregnant. So those are conversations or things that haven't been in my mind, but I understand that out of the 350 plus million people that we have in this country, some people probably have to go through that. So I have that sense of empathy and understanding, okay, I would probably make a different decision, but I have to understand and respect the decision, you know, that they would make in regards to that. So
right. And at the very least, you understand. And you work to understand.
Yeah.
And that's what being a good friend's all about. You know, you're not just waiting, you know, playing defense, trying to shut them down as soon as you can, looking for your opening to throw a right hook, you know. So you're actually listening and you're learning. Yeah.
And trust me, you know, in my younger years, I was definitely, you know, staunchly Republican, staunchly conservative. This is where I'm at. And if you want to go, bring it. But that's just as you get, and I'm not, you know, saying that being 31's old, but it's a different perspective. I've had more success in my personal life, in my professional life, in public service, when I'm able to sit down and just listen to somebody else's viewpoints and be willing to have that dialogue and go back and forth, as opposed to saying, nope, this is where I'm at. See ya. Like, it hasn't worked for me in any asset, in any faction of my life. So that's just where I find success. I'm going to continue to go in that direction. And having empathy, promoting dialogue has been my way of going about that.
Just a minute ago, you said that, you know, you're a man.
Contradicting already.
Well, no, I'm not.
I identify as a man, yes.
Okay, well, you kind of beat me to the punch there. So I was saying, you said that men, can't, I'm a man, I can't get pregnant. You know that's a controversial thing to say in some circles. Yeah. What do you think about the fact that that's controversial?
Yeah, and I, you know, I don't wake up every morning and say, how can I offend somebody today? Like, I've had people that have asked for me to refer to them in one particular pronoun. And, you know, I am about respecting people, especially if I don't know you. And now if I get to know you and realize you're an asshole, you know, I might have a whole different perspective of going about it. But what's the best way to put this? The most respectful way to put this. I don't necessarily understand the push for those kinds of things. But again, it goes back to I haven't been through the realities, maybe, of what some of those individuals who identify as A, B, C, or D, And so I have to be respectful. But this point of screaming and yelling at people because they didn't use the correct pronoun, or, you know, saying that you're being oppressed because we don't pass legislation that accepts 27 different pronouns like the state of New York. For us to get to that point, I think we're just getting too far ahead of, I think we have a lot of other conversations that we need to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it just comes down to being good people. I mean, nobody, like I said, I don't wake up in the morning looking to be disrespectful or to make somebody upset. But if I don't use the correct pronoun, I don't need you to, you know, tell me how I'm stepping on your rights as a person to, you can identify with however you want. I believe, right. You know, for the most part, that government should stay the hell out of my personal life. But you can't say stay out of my personal life and then push for legislation that basically makes that, you know, it's just not, in my opinion, it's not practical. Those are conversations that, yes, we can have, but for us to put it in the scope of government legislation, going back to anytime you prop up one group, it is going to be, you're going to be stepping on another, and we need to weigh those. You know, we have this tendency nowadays where, well, they said it on Monday, it's going to happen by Friday, so we got to go, 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 go. It's like, no, there needs to be conversations that happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm just, you know, I think of it, you know, my grandpa, you know, he's somebody that if someone were to come to him and say, I want you to call me this, you know, he's obviously not going to understand that. I mean, it's generational. So for us to sit back and say, in a country that has an older population, to sit back and say that we're going to the Stone Ages because we don't accept that kind of stuff. I think it's a stretch.
No, and I mean, you just kind of touched on it there. By the way, pronouns are a closed linguistic category, which means they are so foundational to the English language that they're closed. You can't change them. Yeah. That's actually a law in the English language. So to ask someone, especially if I look like this, and I say, call me a she, and I've sat across here from two trans people, and a doctor who does work with trans people in the LGBTQ+ community, to expect especially old people to change how they address you in a way that's so different as to suggest that they call you a she when you obviously look masculine, or to call you they, of all things, that doesn't quite make sense. To call you a plural thing when you're a singular thing, a plural noun instead of a singular noun, that makes no sense. They're not going to do that. And in places like, in places like Canada, and I believe in places in California, they've passed legislation so that it's punishable by law for federal workers. And in Canada, federally funded professors, that if they call someone or refuse to call someone by their preferred pronoun, they can actually go to jail, and many have. Jordan Peterson, I got a couple of his books back here. I went and saw him in Chicago not too long ago. Sure. It's kind of how he got his claim to fame, and I say that hesitantly, but because he made such good points, and he pointed out the flaws in the legislation that demanded in Canada, because he was at Toronto University, that he pointed to all the holes in logic and in morality that were in these laws passed by Justin Trudeau, in Canada. He pointed at all these flaws, and people were like, he's freaking right. And then just as many people started hating him more, because it's like, hey, you're hating us, you're transphobic and all the rest. But that is one issue, and I've sat and across from people that are in the trans community that I really respect, that I really admire in some ways, I still can't wrap my head around the pronoun thing. That's lunacy to me. Yeah. That infringes on your freedom of speech.
Yep. Yeah, and it does. And I'm, like I said, I'm a black and white person. I believe that the Declaration of Independence, I'm getting on a huge tangent here, but I believe that the Declaration of Independence is a key to decipher the Constitution. And in there, very clearly, it says that all men and women are created equal, endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Anything that you do that infringes upon somebody's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, in my opinion, is unconstitutional. So for us to put in legislation that says you can't identify as a cat or as a, you know, they or as any of those pronouns is unconstitutional, just as it's unconstitutional for them to put you in jail or me in jail because we don't we refuse to admit somebody. It's a two-way street, and that both sides have to be willing to accept that we have to give a little bit in order to find common ground, and then that's where we can move forward. But we're not even on the same, like, page when it comes to, I mean, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, progressives, whatever, we are not on the same page. So you can't have a conversation when you're not even on the same page.
Right. And I guess to get on the same page, we need to have a few more podcast conversations with people that we disagree with, people in the trans community, maybe you and someone in the trans community, because like you're saying, I completely agree. You can identify however you want. And just the same, I can say whatever I want, so long as it's not threatening to someone's life. And by the way, it's not threatening to someone's life if I'm like, I don't think I can call you those pronouns, or if I mess up. But yeah, I guess I think freedom of speech is one of those fundamental rights.
Yeah, it is. And that's why it's number one. I mean, it is there for a reason.
Right.
And it's when you put in the cultural aspects like the, excuse me, with the LGBTQ, and I'll be clear, I think that the struggles and where the LGBTQ community has come from is completely separate from this entire pronoun thing. You know, I mean, I have plenty of friends, you know, back in school, you know, who are gay. They're great people. Would I choose that lifestyle? No, I wouldn't. But they're good people to have a beer with. They're good people to hang out with. Mm-hmm. Their parents make great food on Christmas. You know, I mean, it's stuff like that. So when I'm having conversations, I don't have a trans friend, but when I'm having conversations with my friends who are gay, that never comes up once. I mean, when I'm not talking to my you know, heterosexual friends, I'm not talking about what's your sexual preference. You know, what do you go to drag shows, or you do anything? I mean, that's just not, it's not how it is. And it's easy with the, you know, stuff that's happening, you know, obviously on TV, everything is like either this way or this way, and there's no in between. But it's just in my personal experience, you know, I've got gay friends who are Republicans, more conservative than I am. I mean, so they just don't fit neatly into that little box.
Right.
So I tend to stray away from conversations like that. And if I come up to somebody that they want a different pronoun used, and they get to me before I have the opportunity to say it, yeah, I mean, I'll respect that, because, you know, you know me, I'm fairly introvert, and I'd prefer not to talk to anybody anyway. So.
Well, no, you're pretty good at talking. I remember back in high school, you used to give the pep rally speeches, and you can speak. You wouldn't be in office if you weren't good at speaking.
Yeah.
So, you know, but you're a very nice guy. You're incredibly nice. What's one thing maybe that you really want to change, that you're fed up with, at least in Livingston County? Something that really grinds your gears, that you'd like to change, that you'll push for to be changed?
So one of my biggest push, and the one thing I've been talking to constituents for the past, you know, couple months about, and really, you know, I've been trying to pick away at it at our different committee meetings and things like that, is I believe we need to get more connected in terms of our infrastructure that we have for our information technology. Cybersecurity is something that is just becoming a huge concern, not just for, you know, places like Livingston County, but for places like Technical Metals. And eventually, you know, once you get online, you know, it could very well be, or more into online stuff, I mean, it could be very much the same situation. I mean, we've got millions of dollars, countless amounts of different information, personal information of people. And there is a huge risk that, you know, we could get hacked by some dude sitting over in Nigeria that basically holds our stuff ransom and says we want $15 million to release all this stuff. That's $15 million that we didn't have before. And the only reason I know that it could definitely happen at Livingston County is because it happened at Technical Metals. You know, we're a small family-owned business, and they wanted $3 million to unlock all of the information that we had. And that's just, it's not probable. It's not possible for a company like us. And it sure as heck wouldn't be a good thing to have to go to your constituents and say, hey, yeah, we're going to have to pay this $15 million that wasn't budgeted because of the cybersecurity issues that we have. So that's a big thing. And I think it ties in well, you know, in 2023 or 2024, maybe 2025, actually, they basically, every law enforcement official in the state of Illinois is going to be required to have a body cam.
Right.
So that is a huge investment on the county. So I want to tie in those investments that we make, that we have to make, and tie them in with, you know, live streaming every single meeting that we have.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And we only do our full board meetings at this time. But I'd like to get to the point where we can spread all that information and basically have it accessible. I would like to see our website get updated to be more user-friendly. But that's one of my big pushes is anything IT is something that we need to make a huge investment for, because, you know, people think just because you're out in the middle of the cornfield that people don't want to get you, but they do. And that's just the realities that we're starting to face more and more.
Right. Yeah. So it seems like you want to push for transparency, among many other things.
Yeah. And I'll make a disclaimer there. You know, I don't want to say that, you know, the county board as a whole, or that the county and different folks that we have aren't transparent, because we are. And that's one of the big, you know, there has been a small faction of people who say that, you know, that the county is not necessarily as transparent. Nobody's ever as transparent as what they could be. But I do know that, you know, I'm the newest member of the Livingston County Board, myself and another individual. And any questions that I ever had, any documents that I wanted, and yeah, I'm sitting on the other side of the dais, so I'm privy to that information. But, you know, even asking other board members, I need a history of this. I need you to lay everything out to me. Show me your notes. All of that stuff has been accessible. Mm. And any time that I've given a constituent a phone number of one of my colleagues, you know, they come up and tell me, hey, this gal gave me a call and asked me about this question that we made. So I don't want to sit here and say that our county is not being transparent. But I do think that we could open up in the virtual, or whatever the hell you call the internet, open up into something like that, just to help push away that kind of stuff where people say, well, you're not being transparent. It's like, well, we are being transparent, because all that information is accessible. It's already accessible. You can come to our meetings. Our meetings are open to the public. But people are so busy now. These are big investments, the IT, and it's not going to be something that happens in a year and a half. And not only that, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but if you were to ask me what is the one thing I learned here in the past year and a half as a Livingston County board member, because I've ran for public office since I was 23 years old, and just finally got elected when I was 29. The biggest thing that I learned is that I'm not the dictator. And all of the things that I can sit here and tell you that I want to do this, 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 and this, and I want to follow this timeline, I have an obligation to convince a minimum of 12 of my colleagues that it is a fight worth taking. Mm-hmm. So I've had constituents, you know, we've had a couple meet and greets here the past couple weeks in a forum, and they've asked me, you know, what do you want to do for the county? It's like, I want to do a lot of stuff. But the real question is, what can I convince 12 other of my colleagues is a worthy cause for us to look up? Because it doesn't just take Seth Welch to say, this is what we're going to do. I have to make that case to the 23 other board members that we have and attempt to convince 12 of them that it's something that we need to look forward. And I have utmost respect for all 23 of my colleagues on Livingston County Board. But just because they like you, or just because we like each other, doesn't mean that we are going to all be like, hey, yeah, I'm all for that. I'm there. That is not how it works. And that's the one thing that I've learned is if you believe in something, if you want something to happen, you better do your homework, you better be prepared, and you better be willing to get torn down, to ask the questions that you don't want to be asked. And so that's when people ask me, what do you want to do for the county? I tell them, but then I put in that little, you know, asterisk that this is all contingent on me being able to convince the people that serve with me that this is something that needs to happen.
Right. You got to fight. You got to prove yourself. It's a sales pitch. It's like you're literally selling something, because you are effectively selling something, because you want the money, which is what the board does. They manage money, the taxpayer money. You say you want to use our money to go to this thing. So, of course, that's going to be it. And it's a good thing that it's difficult to get things done to an extent. You know, it shouldn't be easy, or else you get people going crazy with money. Amen. Then you get that irresponsible rich kid that's doing wild things and somehow manages to get himself into debt. So it seems like you got to get ready for the fight. And we're getting towards the end here, Seth, and it's been a really great conversation so far, but I just want to check in to see if there's anything that you wanted to touch on before we go ahead and wrap things up.
The most important thing would be to make sure that you get elected, I need to get elected. that's the goal, is to make sure that you get registered to vote and that you go out and you vote on June 28th. A lot of people, the election is actually in June, or actually in November, but the reality is that who you vote for on June 28th on the Republican ticket is who is going to be elected into office. So really, the actual election is on primary day, June 28th. So you know, it was the first thing that we talked about. on a local level, it is the most important level of government. It's the most personal. It's where you have your ability to come in and physically have contact with me and say, this is where I stand on issues. I can't tell you, Paul, how many decisions that I've made over the past year and a half where it wasn't 10 minutes me walking out that door. I had a constituent on the phone with me saying, I need you to explain the decision that you made. Mm-hmm. And as long as you make that decision, you prove your point, 9.5 times out of 10, they're all like, that makes sense. But local government, it is the most important most important level of government, and people have to be actively involved in that. And I'm not necessarily as concerned as what I have been in the past. You know, we have obviously the gubernatorial elections, you know, running for the governor. All of our statewide offices are up for election. So that's where you'll vote for that. And that tends to get people out. But one of the most important races that we have in Livingston County is the sheriff's race. And I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier that all of the changes that we're seeing in the criminal justice and law enforcement arenas across the country, whether we like it or not here in Livingston County, those changes are coming. And how we address those changes, how they're implemented, and how we live with them is in large part going to be at the discretion of the individual that you elect for sheriff on June 28th. So to sit this one out and think that you'll pick it up later, it's not an option for this one. So I encourage people, particularly for the sheriff's race and even the county board race in District 3, is to find out the individuals, you know, who are running, and the sample ballots will be coming out shortly.
Ryan Boehm and
Tom Bogaski. And not just for those two, but for, District 3 in particular. You know, we have one of the most competitive races that's coming. Find out where those individuals stand on the... First of all, research the issues and research the changes that you're seeing in the state, and then use the opportunities that are coming up. We just had a forum a couple of weeks back in February for District 3 candidates. There'll be a few more coming. And then, you know, Livingston County has three districts, and each one is doing a very good job of making sure that they offer, you know, opportunities for people to come out, shake hands, and figure out who somebody is. So take those opportunities, figure out what the causes are, figure out who the candidates are, and figure out how you align with those particular, because, you know, in specific for the sheriff's race, I would argue they're both, you know, Mr. Bogaski and Mr. Boehm are very young. I would argue that whoever gets in there on June 28th is going to be our sheriff for the next, you know, I'd go even far as to say the next decade. So they are going to determine how all the changes that we had in law enforcement, they are going to be, you know, a primary driver of how it is that we address those issues and moving forward. So I encourage, there are plenty of opportunities out there. I don't believe we have any actual, as far as the county board members, I don't believe we have any actual debates or forums. It's more of the meet and greets, but there are some things coming up. May 31st comes off the top of the head, and they'll be at the Illinois Farm Bureau in Pontiac, the opportunity for the sheriffs to debate each other and take personal questions. So I that's the one thing, you know, no matter who you vote for, make sure you understand the issues, make sure you understand the candidates, and make sure you vote, because it's a big election coming up. Literally all 24 members of the Livingston County Board were reducing down to 18. They made a vote on that back in May or June. So the individuals, you know, that you see there are, you know, it's a fresh slate, man. And so there's could potentially be a lot of different directions that the county takes, and people need to be aware of the issues. They need to figure out where they stand on those issues and figure out which candidate's best going to follow through with that.
Right on. So, you also have a Facebook page called Livingston County Updates by Seth Welch, I believe. And I mean, you talked about the importance of transparency, and mm-hmm. that's a great place. Would you recommend people go follow that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier. I am terrible. I don't have social media personally. I have someone that does it. Thankfully, she does it for me, and it's just not something that I'm interested in. But it is, you know, stuff like using platforms like this to be able to just get out and have conversations where people can understand. I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, you know the value of something like this. So I'm not necessarily an open book, and because I know I'm not an open book, that's why I take part in things like this, where you can ask me questions all across the board, and you just answer them honestly and try and be as straightforward as possible. So
right.
I've got nothing to hide, and I like I said, I shy away from social media, but I understand the importance of it, especially in today's day and age. So I even was told I have an Instagram page now. So
you do?
Yeah.
I follow it.
Yeah, good deal. Good deal.
That's news to you.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. But I need to, that's one thing I need to work on. You know, I obviously, when I was running for election the first time, you know, made a big push that I would, you know, be active, involved in that. And just with COVID and my personal work, you know, and you try and balance everything, and it's just, I'm not the kind of guy like, hey, what's going on today? Mm-hmm. I absolutely wish that I was. So how I kind of step off of that is to make sure that I show up to the forums, make sure that, you know, if anybody has any emails are answered within, you know, 25 minutes, or to make sure that, you know, if people give me a phone call, that you answer that phone call. So that's my way of being transparent and open to people. We're definitely going to be trying to push for the social media usage. So yeah, I encourage you to, or any of the followers or listeners, to jump on there as well.
Wonderful. Well, Seth Welch, hey man, it's always a pleasure talking to you. It's always a lot of fun. This beer was a great asset
delicious.
For me today. I mean, it's delicious and also got my ideas flowing a little bit and the words coming out. So thank you, Emancipation and Seth Welch. Hey, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate
it. June 28th.
That is the day. Yep. I'm not specific. I do want to tell you, any questions that you have in regards to election dates or anything like that, I just did it before I walked in the door to see how easy it was. You literally type in Illinois election and it will pop up everything that you need to know about that. And we have a great group of people over at the Livingston County Clerk's Office, ran by Christy Mashing. Shout out to her. She's a tremendous person, as is all of her staff that are there. And they deal with me all the time. They know how simple I am, so they're willing to take up any of the questions that any of these smarter people would be willing to ask. So
wonderful. All right, well, that's a wrap. Seth Welch, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure.